Podcasting 2.0 for June 5th, 2026, episode 262, Pod Cleanse. Hello, everybody. Have you been wondering what's going on with podcasting? Well, you came to the right place. This is Podcasting 2.0. It's where we do the board meeting every single week. In fact, we are the only boardroom that never meets in secret. I'm Adam Curry, here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama. The man who holds all the power of Greystoke. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, Mr. Dave Jones.
Meeting in secret is way too much trouble.
It's cool, it man. Time. It's cool. No, it's cool. You got to have Chatham House rules. We have Chatham House rules, everybody.
I don't even know what that means.
Oh, Chatham.
What is Chatham House rules?
Well, you know what Chatham House is?
No.
Chatham House is basically the UK version of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Of course it's British.
Yeah. And so the Chatham House, you know, that's where the liberal world order is decides their rules there. So Chatham House.
The international rules-based order.
Oh, yeah. That's where that all takes place. And then they give the Council on Foreign Relations their marching orders, and somewhere the Bilderberg group comes in and the Trilateral Commission. But ultimately, Chatham House, anything discussed at Chatham House may not be discussed outside of Chatham House. It's a bit like Fight Club, only with nerds.
Chatham nerds House. Yeah. And old rich people.
Yes. Very old rich people and weenies. Yes, exactly. And
It starts at Chatham House, goes to the Council on Foreign Relations, then to Bilderberg, and eventually it winds its way all the way down to the AMP Accords.
The AMP? Yes. Yeah. The AMP. And you know, it's real. This is how things work in the kingdom, man. So, you know, I have I love my robot. My robot is
don't say that.
I
don't
do.
Say
no, that. I love
just
my.
Find a different way to express it.
Well, it's a robot. I mean, it's just a robot. It's not like I didn't say I love my AI or my chatbot. I said I love my robot because my robot.
But when you say I love my robot, it just makes me think of like the movie Her or something.
Oh no! Don't do it. So my robot is very highly tuned for the boardroom. Okay. And you know, it's built all kinds of stringers and agents, and it goes out, and so it brings stuff in that's important. It whispers the entire power podcast, brings me back stuff I need to listen to, tells me the topics, you know, so I can like hang out with my wife while the robot's doing the work. And today it was filled with all kinds of little bits and bobs from you and Spurlock, and like, oh, this is interesting. And so I've been thinking a lot since our last board meeting. Hello, boardroom, by the way. Good to see y'all. And then like 15 minutes ago, you say, oh, yeah, by the way, Spurlock on the show today, which I had missed that email because you always copy me on the invite. That's our system consists of Dave invites somebody and sends out an invite, a calendar invite. And if I catch it, then, you know, oh, yeah, that's right. So I had to send him out a...
Does that qualify as meeting in secret? I don't think it does.
It's not really, no.
Okay, no.
And he's like the perfect guy to round out the trio of the on the show today as we chair the board meeting. Because I'm just full of ideas, man. I got so many good ideas, and I'm so excited to share it with you.
I'm bringing stuff to the table, but if I don't want to, you know, I don't want to throw cold water on your excitement here. So feel free to.
Well, I mean, share. I have a rundown. Why don't we bring Spurlock in? Because he's the kind of guy that he has nothing to promote. You know, he's rich, independently rich. He has a farm or something. I don't know what he's doing. He's got livestock and
yeah, Brussels sprouts.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the boardroom the man behind OP3.dev and Livewire.io from the great state of New Jersey, John Spurlock.
Hey guys, good to be here.
Hey,
always fun to and ready to talk about WWDC next week.
yeah. Okay, wrong podcast.
That's all I got.
Maybe you can go on the with those Overcast guys. Talk about that there. Liquid glass sucks so bad. There you go. There's your whole podcast. Everybody hates liquid glass. Do you hate liquid glass?
I've actually been out of podcasting for a while. We went on a kind of like a week-long trip, and you know how it is. It's a great time to kind of like declare podcast bankruptcy and, you know, live a real life. But then you come back, and then a lot of stuff has happened, and so I've been catching up, and it's very interesting times, that we're living in. But
that's called a pod fast, by the way. And you pod fast.
Very pod nice. Cleanse.
Pod cleanse.
I recommend it, though. Yes. It is nice. It is nice, everyone.
The danger, though, there's a lot of danger in pod fasting because sometimes you find that your life is so much better that you don't resume.
you don't want to go back.
Yeah.
Well, really, do you feel that way, Dave? Do you feel that if you stop listening then and you get back into it and you feel that your life was better without him?
The total hours of podcasts I consume, if you charted it on a monthly basis for the last 5 years, has steadily declined. Yes, it has been on a downward trajectory, not precipitous, but a very steady downward decline.
I like once every 5 or 6 weeks, I drive to Austin, honestly, to get my hair cut. And it's only because I'm loyal to the girl who's been cutting my hair for 16 years. But man, I love, because I don't drive much. I drive to HEB, you know, like 10 minutes, 8 minutes. Mm. So I have an hour and a half each way. And I'm just like, listen to this and listen to that. And then I'm really into it.
I'm listening to way more. I'm listening to way more audiobooks than podcasts. Cause I don't, honestly, it's news that I just can't tolerate anymore. I'm tired of the news cycle.
So what you're saying is you don't listen to No Agenda anymore. You just skip it. You're done with it.
I stopped listening to No Agenda like 2 years ago.
No, thank
because for this reason, but for
so
the reason
special.
That
I feel
no,
special.
No, for the reason I stopped listening was that this may be an interesting story.
Okay.
So the reason I stopped listening was because I didn't want to hear the things you said on No Agenda. So that it would then affect the discussion here.
Valid point.
So I would always avoid. So what would happen is I would always avoid the Thursday show of No Agenda.
Oh, okay.
Because I was afraid you'd say something that I wanted it to be fresh when I heard it on Friday. So then that led to, you would say something on Sunday that would bleed through and give me ideas and stuff like that. I can't do this. So I stopped listening altogether. And I was like, I want to be fresh on whatever Adam's thinking process is.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. And I understand. I mean, I was just telling Pastor Jimmy this morning, it's like, I love doing podcasting 2.0 because it's really board meeting, podcasting, blah, blah, blah. Really, it's just an opportunity for me to catch up with Dave.
That's
really what it is. Like, I just want to catch up with Dave, see what's going on.
Because we used to talk more, you know, like on the phone and stuff like that. And then now, you know, now this is sort of the time I get to talk to you all the time,
and it would be like, okay, you hang up first. No, you hang up first.
Okay.
Remember those days?
I love you, sweetheart.
Bye. Okay, hang up. Bye. I'm going to hang up now. You. I'm really going to hang up. Yes, here I go.
But then, the funny thing that happened, though, was that after I stopped listening to No Agenda for that other reason, I now find any sort of podcast that has news in it
is annoying,
intolerable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It is. And it's totally intolerable.
It's hard for me to even listen to This Week in Bitcoin. The only reason I listen to it is because I just support Chris and everything he does.
That's still my guaranteed every week go to listen. But I don't think I ever miss an episode. There's just something about it that I just like it. You know, he's using a lot of robots too now for his clips. I need to coordinate with him because
y'all should use economies of scale.
Yeah. So John, what's your go-to podcast, man? What do you never miss?
You know, I was just thinking.
Pod Save America?
I'm into this. It's because I listen to hundreds.
Goalhanger?
Hundreds. So hundreds. I have so many podcasts that I have subscribed in my little app that I have here.
Oh, that's just, you're just helping the podcast industrial complex with your auto download. I mean, that's not doing anything.
Well, actually, so I'm still using an app that I did a while ago to learn SwiftUI back in the day. And it doesn't auto download anything. So when it comes in, I do an initial swipe, you know, and most I swipe away. Nope, not even. So they're actually getting from me whether or not I actually intend to listen. And once I download, I pretty much do eventually listen to. Mm. So very few auto downloads from me. But I actually get this question all the time because you say you work in podcasting. And the first question is something like,
is that your pickup line? Hey, baby, I work in podcasting.
I'm big in podcasting. As they say, what are your top three podcasts? And I have no, you know, everyone you can't answer
that.
Something like that.
People ask me that all the time. And another one is, what's your favorite song of all time? What's your favorite music video?
ABBA? Yeah, you should have something ready for that.
I got nothing.
ABBA.
ABBA. Dancing Queen. Come on, man.
I heard, I saw a good trick the other day. There was a karaoke thing going on, and someone picked Tequila. Tequila. And I was like, that's genius. The whole time, you're just sitting there watching this person dance, and then they say one word. So this is a perfect karaoke song.
Tequila.
So I need an equivalent of that for podcasts. Like, what's my favorite? Podcasting 2.0, clearly.
Obviously.
Did you get any on you, Dave? I'm going to wipe it off.
That's why we were at the Black Label Society concert. He's like, you know what my favorite city is? Nashville.
Of course. Like,
yeah. What city are we in tonight?
At the risk of turning this into this week in AI, I am interested, like, have you done anything, Adam, on the client side of things? Like, do you have your robot go out and sift through your podcast and say, like, hey, just give me the sort of important bits on the listening side? Because I could see that being useful once you start trusting it.
What I did is, and I have other things to talk about, but I will tell you this. There's this site called bingit.io, which redirects to noagenda.clipgenie.com. And Dean, who set that up, he has all the episodes, all the transcripts, all the clips, all the show notes, and he's run some AI stuff robot over it. And it's a search engine. So if you go in there and you search for something, then you can put, then it'll say, okay, here's the relevant No Agenda episodes, and you can listen to, because we publish all the clips, so he has the clips. You can click on the articles, but you can also just in the transcript click on it, and then you hear that part of that show, which is fun because, you know, some of it is like really bad quality. It's 15 years old. So I hooked that into the robot. So I said, look, here's a 5-hour Senate confirmation hearing. Go and find clips in this and measure it against the corpus of everything we've done for the past 18 years. So it'll go back and it'll find things that we said previously. So it gets kind of an idea of the attitude that we had about it. And then it knows what more or less it knows what I want from a clip out of it. Mm-hmm. And it'll make a series of 3 to 5 clips. I mean,
not bad. Now that's still on the production side, but anything on the like personal listening side where it's like, there's too many podcasts. I need help. Anything like that?
No.
I think an app would probably be the best helper there.
No, exactly what I said is Pod News Weekly Review. I don't always have time to listen to it just because of my schedule when it comes out and then stuff I'm doing Friday morning. So the workflow is find out what's going on, find out what pieces correspond to what I already wanted to talk about or what Dave and Spurlock and whatever's going on No Agenda on podcastindex.social. And then it'll highlight those for me. And then I go into the podcast app and I hit those chapters. So it's kind of doing a couple things for me. So that is indeed on the client side.
Yeah. I've actually been really surprised with how often I use transcripts. And I use them primarily through Apple Podcasts. So like yesterday I was listening to the catching up on the AMP stuff.
Yes.
And I have to say, like, they did put out two fairly informative episodes on what they're doing. So,
oh, wait. They have
although their site wasn't great,
wait, they have a podcast?
They did talk about it.
They have a podcast?
Yeah, they have two podcasts. Oh. I subscribe to it.
Oh.
And they did lay it out rather well.
But who is they? Who is
Oxford
they
Road. Oxford Road. Oh, I mean, okay, this is Dan. Oxford Road's yeah. thing, right?
Well, I've had a lot of thoughts about this, and I'm glad that you took us right there into the AMP thing. So the way I understand it, let's just skip the definition of a podcast for a second, and I will come back to that. So in essence, they have come up with a new measurement guidelines, and the measurement guidelines are pretty simple. I mean, in fact, I feel that they really made a huge mistake by saying, okay, a play is 30 seconds of content played, audio or video, once per user per session. Then the number of unique users who had a podcast play, I'm not quite sure what that means, should have been unique. Anyway, it seems like something wrong with that sentence. An ad impression, a commercial begins playing for the user. These are very specific words. An ad audience, the number of users exposed to an ad impression, which exposure. Sounds like a guy in a dark alley opening up his coat, like, hey, look at this ad. Are you impressed?
I was exposed.
and I was just, I was thinking about this. I mean, let's just talk about that first. What is, cause both you and Dave were going back and forth on the Mastodon. What are your initial thoughts about this, about these measurements?
Again, I try to look past the marketing site, which is clearly a marketing site for the yeah. Oxford Road. And if you listen to their podcast, the 12 people that they have on the group are folks that work with Oxford Road, right? And they are ad buyers and networks. And I think there's a guy from Libsyn on there as well. And they have their own summit, and they picked 12 people to be part of the secret group. I have no clue why they decided to really go gung-ho on the secret route. Multiple times they're like, oh, we've been doing this in secret. I don't know if they think that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
I think it's
really odd.
Chatham House. It's Chatham House vibe.
It makes
you know?
It more exclusive or
no,
I don't know.
No. I think it means that we didn't, believe me, I know how Chatham House people think. And these to me are Chatham House people. They're thinking, you know, we did this. We really got together. And you know, and we were underground, and we didn't have any outside influences, and so this was the best way to do it. So we didn't have anyone pushing or pulling at us, which reminds me of the movie by Danny Kaye. I think it is A Song Is Born. I got to look that up. And it's a bunch of professors, and they go down in secret for years to write the definitive encyclopedia of music. And as they're ready to publish, they come out and they're, here we are, we're ready to go public with our encyclopedia, and jazz happened. And they completely miss that. And they're like, what is going on? What happened to music?
That's funny.
It's a great movie. And so I think that was well-intended, more as a, we were serious, you know, we put our time into it. That's what I think that is. It too yeah. is a bit of marketing, but I don't think it's nefarious per se.
And there are three of the members that aren't comfortable with being listed even. So that goes to the, you know, we have to be sensitive as far as a lot of the decision makers aren't in that group. So if a company is signing up to some of these proposals, they may not even be able to make the decision within the company itself.
Yeah.
But I honestly just want to look at it as a, and I think I tried to say this yesterday in the group, is just look at it from what they have proposed. And I'm really allergic to all these, especially
sorry,
as happens in software
they,
now.
Not proposed, they ratified, let's just be clear.
They have, with no dissenting votes, yeah. But the stuff they've produced, right? Like, what is actually there today? And there's yeah. not a lot, and they say as much. And I'm really sick and tired of software companies and pre-announcing things, right? So I will...
Right.
I'll try not to pre-announce things, right? And say, it's coming in 3 months. No, if you have it... You know, there's so much stuff out there. Let's limit the news to like actual news.
Put up a show.
But I mean, the definitions that they've laid out, I think it's useful as a starting point for discussion. Like I think what they want is that the players would somehow feel that there's, and this is why I went back into the transcript. I wanted to know their exact language because it's like they used a great word I couldn't remember, but they want to hasten the demand for this idea, right? So they want to get it out in the world and sort of make it more apparent that this is a problem for some people. This is a problem for people that are in the advertising business and podcasting. When they comparatively are using podcasting as a channel in relation to other channels, right? So there's certain things that podcasting can give you, and then there's some metrics that it can't. And so they're hitting these problems. I fully agree. There's probably people that have these problems, and it's just more of a way for them to get it out and into the world and make sure that other people know about it. So it's, in that respect, I don't have a huge problem with it. I do think it's going to be hard. Like, do they have Apple on board with this? Do they have YouTube? Ultimately, they want Apple, YouTube, and Spotify to agree to these numbers or these metrics. And I'm not sure why they would do that they would do that now.
Oh man, because that is what always happens in podcasting. When Dave and I started this August of 2020,
Apple's never going to do it.
Never going to do it. If you don't get them on board, it's not going to happen. And we've been hearing that for 10 years. And now we are 16 years into the Apple. If Apple doesn't do it, and it won't happen, it's not important, blah, blah, blah. And what you see is Apple now does stuff kind of without even asking anybody. And, we'll do HLS video. Blah, 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 blah. So it's still just as pathetic as it always was. And on the secret WhatsApp group, are you in that, John? The WhatsApp group?
I am, yes. I think I know the one you're talking about.
And the hilarious part is there's a secret WhatsApp group complaining about the secret AMP group. And
nice.
And in the group, it's like, you know, their solution is to yammer about it. Oh, we need to invite more people into the group. And I love this. I hope they never kick me out. I love this group because I am a WhatsApp user because of friends in Europe. And I just, you know, it's on mute. So I just go in and look at it every you know, couple times a day to see what's going on. And it's like, okay, we need to get so-and-so in. Yeah, we got so-and-so in. Well, how come they didn't do that? I'd be like, blah, 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 blah.
I guess this group isn't Chatham House rules then, huh?
It's totally Chatham House rules. In fact, listen to this. I think this is from Cridlin explaining the rules. We don't quote from this group, even me. And Apple has threatened to pull my arms and legs off for something I've written on here in the past. So there are eyes here. So there's also spies in the group. I mean, this is...
Oh, that's great. That's great. look, this, I will... Don't... Please, nobody has ever asked me to be a part of any of these groups. I've never gotten an invite to them. Do not ever ask me, because the answer is no, I hate this crap. I'm completely allergic to all secret groups. Do not even bother. Nothing gets me more irritated than a bunch of secret groups making a bunch of decisions that has zero visibility.
Well, they make no decisions.
Just presenting it to the world as if it's somehow legitimate. If I cannot follow the trail of logic that shows how you came to a decision, your decision is completely worthless to me.
It is a very guilty pleasure of mine.
I'm sure it's fun to watch. But
because
gosh.
I've never been invited to these groups. This is the first one I was actually invited to. There may have been a Slack group at some point that Todd Cochran, RIP, that Todd Cochran invited me to. But, you know, I lost Slack a long time ago. I don't know what's going on. But WhatsApp is something I'm still in. Now,
this is like... I want to compare this to the secret group, to the topic being discussed of HTTP signing, which we'll talk about later. In public, in the GitHub discussions, and you can see everybody's point of view, and everyone is arguing for their side, everyone, and presenting their arguments. It is a completely transparent, above board, open participation discussion.
Yeah, I can't handle those. I can't handle those.
No, it's the goal of the If the goal of the AMP folks was to, and again, it's hard as a tech person to not hear AMP and then hear Google's, I don't know, Dave, if you remember AMP's sort of.
Spent a lot of time making support for AMP back in the Freedom Controller and on different websites, and then Google rug pulled it.
And now it's not a thing. But if the goal was to get everyone talking about it, I think they've succeeded, right? Everyone knows who Oxford Road is now. Everyone knows their definitions. And honestly, I think that's a good starting point. Like, if the apps are all trying to not coordinate, they're competing, but if they all want to choose a common definition, at least now they have something to work with. And if people have a problem with it, you know, I'm sure they'll hear about it. So I don't have a huge problem with it. It's once they come out with actual technology and actual sort of ramifications or changes that need to happen to the ecosystem. I don't honestly see that happening. I think this is more of a, hey, we're getting client stats now from Apple and from Spotify and from YouTube, and they're completely different, and we'd like them to be similar. That's it.
Okay. Thank you. Now I need to tell you what I've been thinking about. Because, man, I went down a long memory road of how all things came to be. And the first thing I want everyone in the boardroom to understand that we have incredible, we are meek. You know how the meek will inherit the earth? We're meek in the way that's not weak. We're meek in the way that we have power that we kind of keep under the hood. You know, like you got a V8, you got a huge blower that you don't see, but then when you step on that thing, it just blah. This is what this group is. And I will remind everybody that when we were told Apple will never do this, Apple will never do that, what happened? Apple did transcripts. Chapters became a thing. The funding tag, person tag, location tag. I know we're on the fringe, but still, we have incredible power just by doing what we do and not writing blogs about it and announcing stuff and meeting in secret. This is the most non-secretive group we've ever had. And we don't give ourselves credit for it. Now, I just need to preface this by saying I have been in the advertising business for a long time. I've been out of it for a long time, but I've been in radio, television, web, podcasting. I built a company. I took it public way too early. Didn't get rich off of it. Did okay. We had $450 million in revenue. I built big websites for Reebok, for Budweiser, for Continental Airlines, for tampons, Tampax, actually, the website you'll visit more than once a month. I did all of these things. I've been on the buy side. I've been on the sell side. At MTV, I brought Budweiser onto the channel, which, make no mistake, was spring break. Was not because we thought it would be cool to do spring break. No, Budweiser. We said, Budweiser, everyone's drinking beer there. We'll make sure it's Budweiser. We'll put big bottles on the stage, and you'll be that. And bring that stupid dog. We'll do the Bud Light thing with Spuds McKenzie. I've done all of that. What I'm going to propose here will piss everybody off except for the advertisers. And will actually have a huge benefit for podcasters. I'm loosely calling it PCDC, the Podcast Data Collective.
Is it a secret?
It's not a secret.
Okay.
And the reason why I'm happy, collective. It's a collective. We're a collective. What is podcasting 2.0? It's a bunch of misfits. You know, we do band every week. Someone shows up with a banjo. We got a guy playing spoons, a washboard. We got five drummers,
jug, blowing on the jug.
We got 18 bass players and one guy shredding. You know, it's like, we're a very weird group, but statistically, the relevance of the podcast app developers, and this is a crazy situation in all media. It has always been the radio station, the TV station, the website who get the advertising. They get a piece of the advertising, and whether they share that with content producers or not is irrelevant. It's always gone through the transmission stations. Now, in podcasting, that turned out a little bit differently. The hosting companies, who, by the way, are the ones actually making money, who do not support directly any podcast apps. The podcast apps, it's very much like Dave and Adam. we've been doing this for 6 years, haven't put a penny in my pocket. Love doing it for podcasting, feel that it's important as a contribution to the world, and we get enough value for value in so we can keep it going. I don't think there's many app developers, keeping Marco aside, who are really living off of any of this stuff. So there's a discrepancy and a break in the system. And where last week I said, you need to cut us in on the advertising revenue, I've changed my thinking. Statistically, the independent app ecosystem, and John, you'll have to jump in, is probably about, I think we can claim 8 to 10% of overall listening apps. Is that a fair number?
Yeah, that's a good ballpark.
So I'm just going to keep it at 10 to keep it simple. When you have a 10% number in advertising, statistically, that is more than enough to make very informed decisions about your advertising money. If the data collective, if we collectively, just like we did with transcripts, just like we did with chapters, if we all start supporting an aggregation of follows, plays per episode, and completion rate by time, and we publish those per podcast, I mean, initially maybe a top 10 or whatever it is, but we make these numbers available so anybody can, any advertiser can go to podcastindex.org. And I'm saying it should be us because I'm pretty sure people trust us, the app developers. I know they trust Dave. You know, they can trust me as far as they can throw me, probably. But my track record shows I haven't screwed anybody in business. If we publish these would be real numbers. So you can actually see who, if you look at a podcast and go, well, how about this episode? Well, here's how many people listened to it by pressing play. Here's how the percentage of people who made it all the way through or listened to where your ad placement was, or whatever reason. There can be many reasons to want to know how long somebody listened. If we publish that initially, publish it and make that available, we will become the source of truth. Matthew 5:6 came up for me today. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. I believe in this. I believe that if we publish these numbers from the independent apps, at 10% of the ecosystem, that at a certain point, we collectively can monetize that data. Not by selling ads, but the first customers probably should be the hosting companies. Okay, hosting company. You want to give real stats from 10% of the entire ecosystem, which you can extrapolate to 100% to your customers. Here you go. Data brokers, you want to sell this to the advertisers, to the buying companies, whatever. Now you got to pay for that. And then we divide that as a collective amongst ourselves, prorated perhaps. I haven't even thought about that. But just the opportunity to stick up a big middle finger to all of these secret groups and podcast industry and IAB and all this nonsense that we've known for so long, let's be able to give podcasters at least an actual number of what is really happening with their podcast. We will be hated for this because it's going to ruin a lot of people's days when they find out that the numbers aren't what they've been telling the advertisers for 20 years. But over time, it will make the industry honest. It will have real metrics so everybody can participate. We have a checks and balances with op3.dev, with Livewire, because obviously so many plays, how many downloads. I mean, we have everything we need to provide the real numbers for podcasters, not advertisers, not networks, podcasters, who then can decide what they want to do with their show, have real, and they should pay for it too, by the way, because this is coming from us. It's time to get paid and time to deliver something of real value, which I believe we can do as a collective.
Backslash. My first take is that data is valuable, and I'm all for getting that data out there. That would be great. I think that handles the half of what the AMP group was talking about, and that is like plays, how long, you know, how many people and how many, you know, how long they got in the episodes. I don't think that handles the exposure aspect of things. And that's the,
why not?
Was this ad particularly listened to?
Why not?
But that could be if you have, well, because you have over, they do dynamic ads, right? And unless this would, you know, not everyone gets the same ad. So just because in aggregate, you have the histogram of how many things were played, if the same ad isn't in each episode, it doesn't.
I'm with you. So those are
deep. But that's not a huge deal. I think even right. plays, I'm with you on that. That would be such an eye-opening thing to.
Let me tell you where this came from. With Godcaster, and by the way, I think we should be the first app to join the collective. With Godcaster, we've had stats for our stations. And for our ministry partners, this is what you call a customer in Christian business, partner. we've had play, share, engagement, etc. Recently, we started doing stats from our app with, what is that program called? Apollo Base? What is it called, Dave?
Aptabase.
And the stuff that we get out of that is fascinating. And the paths that people take, and anybody can put this into their app. Now we're starting to do, you know, just to see how long people are actually listening. So the data, I totally agree with you. There's some with dynamically inserted ads, which by the way is remnant crap inventory anyway. But okay, maybe we can actually get those out of the business by creating something that's very valuable. You know. Even now you can track in-host reads, how many people actually listen to it. We have so much power with just 10% of the listening apps out there. That's the point I'm trying to drive home.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you be willing to prepay apps to do it, right? The pool will be very small, I would assume, to start out. Would you be willing to kind of seed that with, because apps are going to need a little bit of incentive to do this. What they're sitting on is actually very valuable. So the question would be, before we start to see the pennies coming in, it would be nice to have some dollars there and some significant dollars right away to do the first lift.
Well, I think the way I envision this is we first have to prove that we have the data and that the data is valuable. And it's a rug pull, basically. The rug pull is just like we're publishing all kinds of other stats. Here's some real top 10 lists. Here's some real data. Maybe something you can query per pot, anything just to prime the pump and show the advertisers or anybody who's interested in this data. There's so many different reasons people want to know about this type of information. I think we need to prime the pump. And then we pull the rug and say, okay, now you have to pay for it. I want to share with everybody, because if someone's going to front the money, then that person's going to be the guy who controls everything and runs all the money. And I don't really want to be that guy. I would prefer that if we can get enough people interested with a couple API endpoints, you know, I'm not sure exactly how to do it technically.
Why would Pocket Cast do this? They would be a good first target for this. I don't think Overcast would be a good first target for this. And between those two, that's a huge chunk of that 10%.
Yeah, but I'm not looking at it that way. That's not how we started with PodFriend. You know, then we went to Podverse. It took those guys a long time. I'm not going to start with them.
The idea of providing a good example. So, you know, instead of a secret room, what if we, you know, get together and figure out a way to represent this so that people can look at it? People like to copy, right? People like to copy something that's working. So, yeah, I'd love the idea of a few intrepid apps putting this out there and then showing. We could even start with their definitions, right? Start with the AMP definitions there. And then seeing what's possible. And then it's more of it gets the ball rolling a bit.
And in fact, at this point, if we can do this, we can actually give you the definition of a podcast. And the definition of a podcast becomes syndicated delivery of media files with precise consumption data for all stakeholders. Now that's a podcast.
Yeah, that's aiming high.
But why not? Again, we were told for over a decade we couldn't do anything. Nothing would work. You know, we can't change anything. It's not true. It's bullcrap. When we really started to do it, and we just did it by doing it, you know, by writing code and by publishing information, people followed. And then
it's true. You need the apps to get it. To have some sort of incentive to do it. But the apps have this information, and if they do it, then you basically have what you need. It's just, there's really, if you look at it as a system, they really don't have the incentive right now to do it. So you got to sell everyone one by one.
That's the way this always works.
Gone. It's always yep. been that way.
It's always been about my, that's what I've tried to explain in the past. It's not enough to write a standard or to code something. You have to convince people to use it. And that requires forming relationships, talking to people in the open, actually one thing it requires that is impossible to short circuit is to take a shortcut to is time. It takes time to prove to people that you're serious and that you're also not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like just staying power has an effect on other people that they become comfortable that you are not just somebody who's going to pop up, have a proposal, and disappear.
And the value is in the data. And once we have the data and we have enough of it, then we just say, okay, now you can buy this data from us. And then we all get a piece of that money. And if we feel like it's not enough, we'll say, okay, we need to raise the price. I'm sorry, we're not getting enough out of this. And the customers are obvious. Hosting companies right off the bat. And they can take their aggregated hosting company data, their download data, compare it to our play data, and they can sell that to the ad. So we don't want to be in the ad business. We want to be in the data business, which is what we're in. All we do is data about podcasts, about metadata, about where stuff lives, where it's at. And now we have this wonderful opportunity that everybody has this. I'm just asking for a few things, a few basics, and we could always build it from there. But
it sounds like you're describing what it sounds like you're describing. I want to make sure that I'm clear. Is sort of a co-op,
a collective? Yes, a co-op. Yep.
Okay. Where all the apps, the listening apps, combine. You know, and open source platforms. We all get together and essentially
aggregate our data.
We aggregate our data in a way that fits what groups like this AMP, you know,
we're giving them more. We're giving them much more. Seconds of play is bullshit.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. No, it's baloney, but We give them actual real stats.
Yes.
That really tell the true story. And then that way the listening apps themselves get to share in the revenue of selling this data back to the people who want it.
Yes. Yes.
I think that's a fantastic idea, but the only thing that I think throws a wrench into the whole thing is the fact that people don't really want real data.
Well, no. See,
they want fake data.
No. People, let's define people. As I said,
advertisers, they don't want to know that their stuff isn't working.
No. Advertisers really want to know. Ad networks don't want to know. People selling ads don't want to know.
But who are the advertisers, though? See, that's the thing, is the advertisers are not the company writ large as a blog.
I'm going back to my experience. Advertisers want the right information. What they always say in advertising is, half of my money is working, I just don't know which half. Advertisers, the companies, the actual mainly fast-moving consumer goods companies, packaged good companies, they want to know if it's working. And what they will find out is, wow, we've been overspending a lot. We will be hated, which is kind of a position I like.
Yes.
I said that. Yeah. We will be hated by a lot of people, but it will be the truth. It will be the truth.
The people buying this from the collective, the buying this data from the collective, would be the advertiser not the agents.
No. The advertise, if that's why you have to make it public for a while. You have to show that you have the truth and this is the proof. That's why the index is a great place to do this, because what are you going to do? Sue us? Who cares? Right. The advertisers will eventually say, hey, these guys say the numbers are this and you're saying it's this. We would prefer to buy based on this. And you know what might actually happen? The CPMs might actually go up because there will be less inventory with more people fighting for it.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's, I didn't think about it in those terms.
And this is the this is why these groups in secret are like, well, you know, we have to have these metrics, but man, we can't let everybody really know that it's all bogus. So let's make a play 30 seconds. That's exactly, why they do that.
Exactly.
That's why they do that.
And that's why seeing the discussion in the open instead of in secret is super important, because if you saw the discussion as it was playing out, you would realize that's what the thinking was. The thinking was, we can't actually see real playthroughs.
Exactly.
We have to limit it to 30 seconds so that we can actually register something instead of this person started listening to the podcast, figured out there was 12 ads in a pre-roll and just stopped.
And this is why I'm so happy that John is on this show, because he has done the work out of the goodness of his heart and got some, value for value, help, but he's really doing it because, I don't know, it's cold on the farm. And OP3.dev is a fantastic, fantastic resource, because now we have even more data to say, well, here's what we're seeing in the listening apps are 10%. It's just 10%. Actually, on No Agenda, it's a bigger percentage because I've promoted them. It's 10% versus what we're seeing on download. So now you advertiser can talk to your agency. Dan Granger may have to downsize his office. I don't know. But we're going to get to the truth, and it will be the most truthful, honest delivery system of all media, because all measurement of all media is a lie. It's just a lie everybody agreed on. But when we get down to this real truth, and it's the true data, what was the promise of the internet when everyone saw it? Well, these numbers don't go up the way we told people they would. So they came up with stuff and we agreed on it and we formed associations and we say, yeah, this is how you do it. Now we can show people the truth, and that will define what a podcast is.
It's a big idea.
I can drop my mic. Hold on,
it's good. I really like the idea of comparing to legacy RSS downloads. By the way, this is how they refer to downloads, is legacy RSS downloads.
Yes, legacy.
So that's how I'm going to refer to them from now on. But you're always going to need them because, like you said, Adam, it's useful to compare that to the actual listens, right? Because then everyone can start doing the math themselves.
Yes.
And like you said, they are looking for, again, taking them at face value, they're looking for accuracy, right? They're looking for, this is why DraftKings and BetterHelp are on the team.
Exactly.
They want to know, if I put a dollar in, what am I getting for that? And I don't see that's necessarily a dangerous or corrosive sort of incentive there. And
not for DraftKings.
And if we're able to give them a better answer than other mediums, and I do agree, Adam, that data is there. It's, in fact, it's already being collected.
Yeah.
It's just not being sent or centralized or in a central clearinghouse at the moment.
And it won't be.
That could be really valuable.
And Apple will never give it to us. Spotify will never give it to us. YouTube will never give it to us. But we don't really need it. That's the beauty. We have the 10%. You got 10%? I can extrapolate. Thank you. I can do math. I got a spreadsheet. I know kind of what it is. Now, it gets super interesting down the road. And maybe some apps will follow Apple's cue and say, well, we have, like Fountain, we have this type of person using our listening app, and we feel that they are very valuable, and there's something we want to do with the data that we have independently. But that only happens once everyone has seen the aggregate and understands, wow, wait a minute, this is the real stuff. But that data, after, and I'm saying it up front, rug pull. We're going to show this data. I'm saying
this is the first ever announced rug pull.
We are pre-announcing the rug pull. We're going to give it to you for free for X amount of time. And then we're going to say, okay, now you like it? Do you like it, little girl? Do you like the lollipop? Now we're going to take it away from you. Now you're going to pay for it because app developers need to get paid. Podcast Index needs to get paid. John Spurlock's OP3.dev needs to get paid. And I want to see Daniel J. Lewis get paid. Now, everybody, we have so many people in our ecosystem with so much power, and we've been so successful on the fringe with chapters and transcripts, etc., that now it's time. And this was the big revelation. I've just been bouncing around all week trying to figure out, where does it break? The only way it breaks is if we don't do it. But if we do it, and the technical implementation is what will make it, Dave, you know, whether it's an, I don't know, maybe you hit an endpoint when someone hits play, maybe you upload a CSV file. I don't know what the answers are, but follow numbers, play numbers, and duration of listening. Those are the three big ones at an episode level. We will have created a true medium called podcasting, audio or video or PDFs for all I care. It doesn't matter, but we will be able to drive the industry instead of a bunch of people sitting inside of secret locations or in offices or in trade associations. That's not what podcasting has ever been. It's never been that way.
Sam Sethi's already done it before we've ended this episode. So any spec that we develop is going to be applied to everyone else.
Yeah.
So like that's probably the difficult part that is going to require a lot of input from everybody in the community is how you do this. Here's always the difficult part is making something like this not burdensome on the app itself, mm-hmm. because that's a lot of data and a lot of traffic.
Well, we've been watching it in real time with what Paul has been doing.
Yeah. It's like, I know that these apps will be willing to share because they already have. I just simply have started asking people, hey, can you give me the follower counts mm-hmm. For all the podcasts in your database? I just want the feed URLs and how many people follow that. And Mitch gave it to me mm-hmm. and Sam and all the, like, people are just like, yeah, sure. Here you go.
Right.
I know they're willing to share, but in order to have it be like an actual pipeline or a workflow, well,
that's
that
why
doesn't
I have,
put
that's,
a lot on them.
That's why the Pod Sage is here. That's what you're going to go back. You're going to go back and you're going to think about it. You're going to go camping and you're like, yeah, I got an idea now. I know how to do it. Yes, of course. This is why you're the Pod Sage. And by the way, I am so grateful to hosting companies who've supported Podcast Index. I don't want to sound like, hey, thanks for supporting us. Now we're going to charge you. But we are, you know.
I suggest a two-stage rug pull.
Okay. Don't rug pull, then rug pull.
You do what Nathan says. You say free during beta.
Yeah.
Then you rug pull that. Yeah. But then the second rug pull is one-time payment, lifetime subscription. Then a year later, you say, "Oh yeah, that we don't mean that. You have to pay every month." So I just want to do all the things all the dark patterns people do to everybody else. We should do all that.
Maybe a data surcharge.
Yeah, data surcharge fee. Yes, a bandwidth fee.
Hey,
Dave, you probably don't remember podcast events, do you? It was a proposal I put together a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
I was about to mention it earlier on when we were talking.
Yeah. It was actually pretty much meant to kind of address this exact problem. It's like, how do we do it? But that was more in a decentralized way. That was assuming that apps would be sharing it for the benefit of podcasters, not the benefit mm-hmm. of
apps,
advertising and apps. So it's like, there's nothing that would prevent you all from sending that to a centralized, let's call it a clearinghouse sort of endpoint, not every single podcast host. So that could be something that could be off the shelf, pretty much used to do this. My big allergic reaction, I think, to this is this whole centralization aspect. And that kind of goes to the signing as well. It's like, as soon as we start really sort of integrating existing apps and hosts, I tend to see that as a bad thing in general. And this would be a massive, like, out-amping amp. Like, we're all working together here.
It's a super amp.
Yeah.
Giga amp. My first thought on how to do this, and hot takes are usually terrible, but my first thought on how to do this was simply to make it decentralized. Okay, well, let me lay it out this way. Centralization is okay as long as it comes after the fact. And what I mean by that is, like, think about Podping. Podping is decentralized, but you have websites like tiles.podping.org that then re-centralize the data back into a feed or a stream or or some sort of product. And all of that, and I mean, that's essentially what podcasting does. Podcasting is decentralized, but then you have these listening apps that are, they aggregate the decentralized data back into a single point of contact. So that is fine. And the first thing that popped into my head on how to do that was, why not broadcast it over Podping? We define a standard of how the stats are to be laid out. Let's just for the sake of discussion, let's say that it was something as simple as just a flat comma delimited CSV file. Okay. I'm not proposing that. I'm just saying let's just keep that in your head as the format we could work with. As long as we specify the columns and the exact data that the way it's supposed to be laid out, the apps themselves could produce a file that fits that spec, and then they could just simply pod ping out from time to time, once an hour, once a day. Who knows? They could pod ping out a URL where that data is publicly downloadable.
Here's the only problem I have with that.
But then everybody would just grab it and we couldn't charge for it.
Exactly. So I'm going against everything that I've ever stood for, really, in podcasting. However, I'm doing it to advance podcasting. And what do I mean by that? Oh, I love when I do that. Well, I should have said, why? Here's why.
Yes. Please question yourself.
There's already a huge amount of trust in Podcast Index. There's entire businesses that depend on Podcast Index being around. Several apps could not live without it. So there's a trust. And I think we've earned that trust, and we deserve that trust. Everything around us, all the things we complain about, involve money. Now, I'm not interested in advertising. I am interested in not just helping the apps that have been, frankly, struggling for years or decades just to kind of keep the new version going, update with the app store, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, now I need a server. But also to have the ecosystem grow with more apps because, hey, I can actually participate in the data collective. And all right, I'm a small app, so maybe I get $5 a month or $5 a week or whatever it is. But now there's your incentive. There has to be an incentive, and it has to be financial, and we will outstrip the demand. The Apple is already 30% of my listeners use Apple. That's a lot less than it was. Now the other 30% is probably Spotify, but I have 7% Podverse. I've got 3 or 4% Fountain. You know, so this is an ecosystem that will grow, but we're not getting into the ad business. Lots of people want to know how their podcast is doing. Just how's my podcast doing? Well, you got this many downloads. What does that mean? Well, now the hosting company can say, for, you know, they charge $20, so maybe they have to pay 50 cents or 25 cents a user into the collective. This is exactly what's going on. This is exactly what's happening with your podcast. You see, it starts to benefit everybody. Why the sigh?
Because it's not the tech of this that makes me nervous. It's the administrative overhead of having to like accept money and then make payouts to people and all that kind of stuff.
But we have an intern.
No, but wait.
That's why we have the rug pull timeline. We have plenty of time. First, we're not there yet. The first thing we have to do is prove that we have the data and that data is valuable. That comes from publishing that data continuously, it being a thing, people going to look at it, podcasters saying, well, here's what I'm seeing, here's what I've got. Once we have that, we may decide at the end of the road, we're going to do something else. We all want a chocolate bar. I don't care. But we have to show the so-called industry that we, as a collective, we have the true data. And you're full of shit. And this is the real stuff. So stop meeting in secret. This is what podcasting is. And a podcast is a syndicated, I had that line written down, syndicated delivery of media files with precise consumption data for all stakeholders. Everything else is not a podcast. Because here's your proof. These are podcasts. Can be video, can be HLS video, can be downloads. I don't care what it is. But that
is there going to be a rug pull countdown timer on the website?
Yes, definitely. Okay. On Times Square. Right. On Times Square.
The big board.
Like the debt clock. Yes.
On the Flatiron building. Okay. Yeah, I guess.
If we do that, if we do part A, part B will come naturally. And so I'm not worried about that part at all. And once we've all figured it out, and there may be five other ideas of what to do with this data, but at least it'll be this group.
It's not a fear.
Because we're all going to get stomped out and rubbed out by the heel of the podcast industrial complex over time if we don't do something like this.
My expectation, if this is truly successful and this data is published for all to see and the extrapolations are made, my expectation is that people would immediately see how much the advertising narrative is built on just complete fabrication.
Absolutely.
And the numbers will expose that very clearly.
I disagree with that, only because they're seeing this today, Dave. So, like the stats you get from Apple are incredibly detailed, and the stuff. I don't know if you've seen a bumper dashboard and that sort of thing. There's companies that will like scrape for a particular show. They'll like go out to Apple, they'll go out to Spotify, they'll go out to YouTube, and they will present it all. So they're actually seeing this today. That bad news or whatever you want to call it. And there's, you know, this is basically Mr. Meisner's job is to kind of educate people as to this. So I don't think it would be much of a shock. And I think, again, I think they would love this information. I think they would love more of it. And we could be a good, this is a big idea, but I think it could serve as an example. And just like with the namespace, the shape of the data, I think is probably the number one thing. Like what?
Yes.
Are we capturing and what do we think is valuable and what is valuable not only to the apps, but like, it's really like what is valuable to the stakeholders. And I think a lot of this would be to talk to folks in the game, right? In the advertising game and say like, would this be useful if we did this? And that's part of the open discussion, I think, that you'd have to talk about.
We need Dan Granger on this show, which I'm sure.
Yeah. Run it by Dan.
I'm sure he'll come on, Dave.
I'll holler at him.
But to be to finally be able to define what a podcast is, you know, we just added a little bit to it, but we define it, not these
personally,
other guys.
I think the podcast definition is a little overreach. I don't think you have to send stuff to podcastindex.org to be called a podcast.
I'm not saying that.
I think holding up podcasting as a great way, podcasting the term being known as a great way to get accurate stats on how things are, how just like kind of digital is, I think that would be great. It's sort of like, it's turning the weakness that a lot of folks see in podcasting right now, which is the uncoordination and the chaos of it, into an advantage. It kind of like flips the narrative.
Here's the great thing, John. It's not exclusive to us. If someone comes along and they have a better way of doing stuff with that data, then all the apps can send that data to them.
Yeah, totally. That's fine. Apple could just look and kind of what they do. They pay attention to all this stuff. They just don't contribute. And if they see, hey, this is working, you know, who knows? They might participate in as well, or participate in something similar. And this is why the shape of the data is probably the most important thing.
So it's not exclusive to us, but I think it would move I'm passionate about podcasting, and I'm passionate about it being on RSS, but I specifically say in my definition syndicated delivery. So it could be something else. I hope it never is, but it could be. And it doesn't have to be us aggregating it. I'd like it to be, but it doesn't have to be. If we do a better job, I mean, it's still it's like Podcast Index itself. We have to go to the GitHub, go build your own. Go ahead. I think everything is open source at this point. Go build your own.
I was in there just today looking at Dave's code.
Yeah, go ahead. Go build your own podcast index. And some people don't want to do that. But I think it is the perfect time when I see these types of groups, and they got the advertiser in there. And yeah, and DraftKings and BetterHelp. They spend a lot of money, and so they want to know what they're spending their money on. That's why they're in there. And so if we say, hey, you know, here's the real numbers, I think we'll be loved by advertisers, but we'll also be loved by speaking bureaus and people who just, you know, want exposure for their book or whatever it is. And then if you want, hey, break it down by app. Hey, it turns out I've got a huge following on Podverse. Let me go talk to Mitch over there. And what can I do, Mitch? Can we do some business here? We started out with podcasting. I happened to have been there when it was this, hey, man, it's all open. We all love each other. And we got fucked. I'm sorry. That just slipped out. We really did. Everybody made money around us.
And man, I was going to come in here and be optimistic. I think podcasting is like rocking it right now. We have a video solution that works great. Everything's still in the open. This is amazing.
It
I don't
is.
Think we
podcast
should
technology,
necessarily invert it.
Podcast technology is rocking because there's people that care.
Yeah, no, I'm super positive. I'm amped. Ooh, I'm amped up because this is an opportunity that I see this like, wow, this is once in a lifetime. We've proven that we can do stuff. We've proven we can move mountains. We can change the big boys by just doing it. So why don't we do it? That's my pitch.
I'm going to clap.
From Spurlock, I take that as a huge compliment.
Very big idea. I love big ideas.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, is there enough energy to even talk about HTTP signing requests anymore? I'm exhausted. I mean, like,
PCDC, we got to work on the name though.
Well, yeah,
that's a small thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have time for acronyms. I just like
Podcast Plus,
Podcast Data Collective.
Plus, plus. PDC. No, it's going to be two pluses.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I'm kind of wiped out too. But if you want to talk about anything else, I'm good. I basically just spewed I blew my wad that I've been holding up for an entire week.
I literally have no energy for HTTP signing discussion at this point.
It's a bad idea. Let's not do it.
that clearly seems to be the sentiment.
I was actually interested to see that Mr. Overcast sort of not only made one like very long contribution, but two. And this is not something that normally happens. So I think we might have hit a nerve there.
What contributions?
Just to the discussion. Yeah.
Yeah, to the open discussion.
Well, I mean, so I guess I'll throw in my let's see where. Where do I start? I think what here, here's my concern. Let me just try to
throw dirt on my idea.
No. This is on the HTTP signing. It's topic shift.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I think that the issue arose from a very, I know how it arose because I talked to Tom about it. The desire for better identification for download agents had its origin in HLS video because abuse of HLS video at those data sizes is extremely expensive. And so let
me. Now, does Buzzsprout have any HLS video out there at the moment?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they support HLS. Yeah, they.
Not in feed.
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, they're supporting Apple spec, but they are definitely serving HLS video.
Right, but it's not in feeds yet. I think the
it's getting abused. It's getting abused because people are scraping the HLS stream out of the podcast.apple.com website. And you are even only using the private API for distribution, it's already getting abused. And that's the concern. And so here, let me just lay out my, what seems like a devil's advocate argument at this point, because what I want to do is not care about HTTP signing. I don't want to have, I mean, like, that's not the thing I want to be. Like the hill I want to die
well,
on.
Well, he titled it well. It's more client identification, right? Like, do we want to add stronger client identification to podcasting?
Right. But I see their concerns, and I think they are identifying a problem that's going to become a big problem. And HTTP signing may not be what everybody wants to do. And that's fine. I'm completely fine with whatever the group decides. That's why we discuss things in the open. But video downloads are large, expensive things. And it's just different than audio. Like, the people... abuse...
I agree it's important for that very reason, by the way.
And I want to talk about this only as it involves HLS video. I want to... Like, I don't think anybody has ever proposed that audio be part of this traditional MP3 downloaded audio podcasts. But so if we're talking about only HLS video, then I don't see there having to be any sort of secret meeting or like Zoom call in order to get your data trusted. To me, what this is, if you send a request for HLS media to our CDN, we would require you to sign the request. And then if at some point in the future we determine that you are an abusive bot, we will stop respecting your requests. Like, it would not be blocked and then you have to contact us to get access. It would be everyone immediately has access by default. It would default open, and then it would only close access when there was an abuse that happened. To me, that's how I understood his proposal. And like, that seemed reasonable to me. Tell me how that's not reasonable.
So I thought you were going to have Tom on the show. I thought that would have been great. But I think it is reasonable. And in fact, it would make my life a lot easier as well. I spend probably way more time than I should spend every day battling the same sort of thing with OP3. Now, I don't block requests, but I do make sure that requests that say they're from Overcast, but then, you know, are hammering the site 1,000 times, like, I have to exclude those, right? And it's always a new sort of challenge every day. Out there, there's new bots, there's new things pretending to be other things, because the user agent HTTP is not, should never have been, and is not a good reliable signal of who's calling, right, in HTTP. In HTTP, you do that with the authorization header. You don't do that with the user agent header. But the question comes in, like, do we want to introduce, should we filter podcast media now? So not, we're not talking about client stats, but the media that has always been open in podcast feeds. Do we now want to add an additional layer of who are we going to send this media versus what are they doing? And I think, you know, Buzzsprout does this today, and all these other companies, what they do today is they look at requests coming in, right? And they make their application level firewalls more complex over time. And to me, there's no it is for audio today, because it's actually similar to video. In fact, the way HLS works, HLS is not one massive file, right? It's like six different encodings, but 6 second chunks. So with right. HLS, it's actually far easier to filter on the server side and detect abuse quicker. I actually happen to, I've been working with some folks, and I'm actually working on an OP3 integration with HLS. You can see a lot more, but some of the patterns are still exactly the same, right? There are a lot of auto downloads, especially in audio, right? So those look like someone's just ripping through the video. So you can't really trap those. And then the videos that are kind of live are human scale, right? So you can see 6 seconds chunks requested about every 6 seconds. Those are easy. It's really, we're talking about a subset of requests that are, give me all the variants, right? Over and over and over and over. And you know how long it takes to rack up appreciable bandwidth bill off of several 6 second chunks? It's a long time. So to me, it's more of an abstraction breakage. I don't think we should be in the business of filtering. Like, if a podcast is putting data out to the media out to the world, to me, I don't think we should be discriminating based on the caller. And yes, that even includes bots, because one man's bot is another man's app, right? So let's say someone uses Claude to create their own podcast app, right? Who knows what they're going to use as a user agent? Who knows what they're going to have as a backend? It's really not something I think that would be good to go down in general. And in the short term, it would help, particularly on the server aspect of things. And the PSP is sort of mainly made up of hosting companies. And this is why I would love Marco to kind of like participate in that a little bit more. I think they'd love to have him, but that would create some balance in the force. But no one's really speaking up for the app side of things and the innovation side on the client aspect of things. I think it's dangerous to sort of view every media fetch, yes, including video, as something that can only happen between known entities. And let's be clear, like, this would be used to filter requests, right? Whether to slow them down or whether to block them. And I do have a bit of information from my position, like looking at all the podcasts that are, you know, released in the world or whatever. There is a list of podcast companies that block more than others, right? And try to do this more aggressively than others. And Buzzsprout is at the top of that list, right? So they block more aggressively than any other company. So when I saw that Tom was involved with this, I wasn't necessarily that surprised. I think number two would be Red Circle. And then there's like a huge drop off. Like, basically no one blocks media requests. And to me, that's a good thing. I don't know if you saw part of Marco's comment was Marco gets blamed when things get blocked, right? So Buzzsprout's never blocked. This is an app problem, right? And to me, I think we should basically do as much work as possible to make app lives easier, because that's where really the current problem that we have in podcasting is. I think having to do more work for John, having to do more work for Tom is a price I think we need to pay in smart kind of server filtering, instead of adding more integration between who's calling and the media itself.
What do you mean by smart?
That's my basic argument.
What do you mean by smart server filtering?
So every company now, when requests come in, right, they get the logs, right? So old school is you look at the logs after the fact, and then every day they go in and tweak either by IP or by user agent and IP, right? So this used to be a very slow process, and now basically think of it as this process is speeding up so that it can almost happen during the day, right? So they see something happening right now, they can quickly turn that one off or slow it down. And if it were me, I would kind of like slow these requests down, right? Because that's one thing to sort of make sure that this is so. If someone sits there and hits download on a movie and it takes an appreciable amount of time to download, that's fine for a human. But that would really squash any sort of dumb transcription bot that's just kind of doing things over and over. Also, transcription bots are not going to read movies. But I think
you're saying tar pitting. You're saying tar pitting instead of blocking.
I wouldn't even if tar pitting means slow down. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily serve weird videos for abuse. I would actually just slow it down so that it's human scale. In the worst, right? If we do determine that this looks like something that's abusive, and yes, honestly, I know that that's difficult, and that's but maybe we could come up with common server libraries or even third party services. Something like an HLS shield, right? Where if you don't want to do this work yourself, you could just put something in front of it, and that will do the work for you.
So are you saying that... Go ahead.
No, sorry, go ahead. I've talked a lot.
Are you saying that you advocate for a hosting company to never block any media download for any reason?
I think yes. I think that is something that podcasting has been for 20 years, and I think that's a dark road to go down, that we should block requests that we don't. We should be innovating in how to serve media as much as possible to everyone. I don't think, unless it's obviously an abuse and that can be detected by use, not by caller. I think we should try as hard as we can to serve media without discrimination.
Yes, it's not about, but it's not, again, I will make another disclaimer because people tend to forget things. I'm giving my best attempt to argue for this, as with everything I've got, just so that we can have the best debate possible about whether or not to even spend our time on something like this. But it's not about effort. To me, it's about cost. So if somebody and I can tell you that this it has happened. If somebody's bot goes wild and downloads terabytes of data, I don't see how we can say that a hosting company should just sit back and just accept that and just pay that bill. When it's clearly not a person who is one, like what the hosting company, the sort of the contract that hosting companies have with the podcasting ecosystem is that they're going to serve their customer, the creator, and by doing so, they also facilitate the media delivery from the creator to the listener. And when it's clear that the listener is no longer part of this transaction, then there's no more contractual obligation there to the hosting company. And I think that this has a problem for decentralization also, because take a hosting company like Pinecast. It's a decent sized hosting company, independent, Matt Basta. It's an independent hosting company. He seems to do pretty well. He's got a, I don't know how many podcasts he delivers at this point, but it's, I don't know, a few thousand at least. And at the scale of HLS abuse that I've heard of so far, I don't think that Pinecast could even do HLS unless
there's a lot of fear coming into this. So it takes a very long time to download terabytes and terabytes of HLS segments.
It's happening, John. I can give you the people to talk to. It is happening.
Yeah. But I just think that it can be detected and should be detected. I don't think that you can download terabytes of audio in the same way. What does Pinecast do? Or what is some even better argument is what does someone like James Cridlin do, right? So he hosts his own show. Let's say he wanted to start doing HLS.
Right.
That's even, you know, he probably is not going to go and have a dynamic HLS filter on his side. So that's probably the question is like who, like is, can this abuse be combated without making the media effectively private. And that's, I would hope that we sort of exhaust, we use all of our kind of innovation that we have in the group to kind of look at that specifically. You know, take Flightcast, right? So Flightcast is a great new company. And this is the awesome thing about podcasting, right? Some, they just came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, they're the producer of basically the highest quality HLS videos out there in open podcasting today, right? So they publish more variants, higher quality variants in more podcast episodes using alternate enclosure than any of the existing providers. And they are somehow able to do this. So I think it's, I don't, you know, obviously I'm just one person. It's just my opinion, but I think this should be something that hosting companies are compared against each other with, right? Like how open can we make our media? Because ultimately it's going to come down to the apps. You know, someone is going to say, I can't play this video in this app because it's on this host. And then we get to this matrix of app.
But why would that happen? But why would that happen? See, like what you're describing is a closed ecosystem, and that's not what this proposal is. This proposal is not for closing the ecosystem. This proposal is for adding a verification metric where you can, where if somebody spoofs your user agent, the CDN can tell that that's not you, and they can block the correct entity that is abusing and not you. Like what Marco was describing with Overcast was middlemen that sit in between and say something like ad blockers or lousy redirects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That
VPNs a lot is filtered.
Or VPNs, out. Yes. Yep. But none of that applies to HTTP signing requests. None of those things are factors there. And what you're saying to me already though is that Buzzsprout is already blocking, and Red Circle, they're already blocking abusive traffic, but that does not show up in normal client app download. That doesn't, we're not seeing rampant failures of downloads for major podcast listening apps from Buzzsprout and Red Circle. So they're doing this blocking intelligently already, even with the limited metric, even with the limited ability to do identification that they already have. This would allow them to do it even more intelligently. And again, only for HLS video, which Overcast does not support video anyway. So this would not even be part of the equation for that app. So like,
I'm sure he'd like to, right? I'm sure if it was there, if there are videos in the feed, that he would definitely take a look at that. I don't think we should use Overcast necessarily as, I mean, even though he was very kind of like adamant on this point, I don't think we should basically do this for him necessarily. But I think it's sort of a dangerous, to me, it's kind of a, you know, if you view the abstraction line where like all the apps are on top of the line and all the hosting companies are below the line, it's sort of this new kind of the hands sneaking over back and forth and saying like, okay, so we know this. And again, Tom's a great guy. Like Buzzsprout is an amazing company. Like that's why I chose to add to that particular thread. Whereas I don't necessarily love to get into all the GitHub threads, but I think it's important because it is a narrowly good idea for certain players in the space, right? Where it's like not necessarily good long term. Like what if Spotify said, you know, tomorrow we're coming out with something called verified apps, right? Where if you want to fetch data, audio from Megaphone or Anchor, we're going to do a signed, you know, cryptographic thing. And then you can like register with us. You know, we're not going to block you based off of it.
That was never the proposal. There was never a registration involved. There was never any sort of coordination. It was purely sign it.
Yep. And it's like basically
just like Mastodon.
This request came from someone that owns this domain name, basically, is what the public key does, or this public key, which is more Signal, right? So that's, I totally see. And again, I can argue the other side, I hope as good as Tom. It would help OP3, right? Because I could say, hey, these are verified Apple downloads and these are non-verified Apple downloads. Again, in the fictional world where Apple would do this. It doesn't. That's probably important. If I'm someone that's doing this abuse, do you think it was intentional, the HLS abuse that you're talking about, Dave, or was it unintentional?
I think that it is my just, of course,
like a bug.
No, there's no way to prove any of this. Yeah. But I think most of the abuse, just from what I see on the index side, most of the abuse comes from carelessness.
Right.
Yeah. Mainly
and what
stuff
user
on vibe coding.
Do they use?
Yeah. Yeah. A bunch of vibe coded, careless stuff. Yes. Yes.
And they're going to continue to use browser user agents, right? And oh, time out.
Is it dinner time? Is it dinner time?
I am just alerting the pod sage that we are at 203 and 129 on the counter. So it's up to you. I'm happy to sit here.
It's my fault. I shouldn't have gotten into this conversation because this is actually a very long conversation. I think it goes to like what podcasting almost is and like if media should be always public versus not for video and audio, but. So it's my fault. That's my fault.
No, it's no one's fault. I just, well, just Dave has a job he has to get back to.
I think the issue.
What do you think, Adam? You invented podcasting.
Oh, what? Someone asked me my opinion? What?
I mean, should the media that it's always been readily available, should the media be free for any caller, regardless if they're faking their user agent or not?
But that's not a fair characterization. I do not care if this proposal goes forward or if it dies today. I really ultimately do not care because the community gets to have its way. That's the way this thing works. But I do deeply care about whether or not it's fairly characterized so that we're all agreeing that we're arguing for the same thing. And it's not, and the way you described it is not accurate, but there is no closing of the ecosystem. What you're seeing and describing is a potential blocking of valid traffic in the future. And that's not a technical thing. That is a behavioral thing that may or may not happen.
It's true. It may or may not happen. I'm just curious what his thoughts are on it.
My thoughts are, I would like, I feel that from the beginning, it's just been open and free, you access and do whatever. I know that video is an expensive data hog and people need to pay for it. And that includes bot stuff. However, I would personally appreciate being able to identify as something valid and tell a company that has blocked something from me, this is valid and this is why. Now, if they decide to block me, okay, there's nothing I can do about it, but they're probably going to block me anyway because they don't know who I am. And I've had this very issue with stuff I've been doing for Godcaster. And it would be, if there's a technical way to identify and say, hey, I'm signing this request and this is me and here's what I'm doing. And for them to say, okay, why is it so much or whatever, you know, that may alert me to something. And that would be totally something that I could mess up. And I have, I think it would benefit. But by the same token, you know, it's like, the problem is I use Linode instances. They're blocked by everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I need to use a Linode instance because I can't just have everything running on my systems at home. So that's where I'd like to be able to sign it and say, this is me and here's what I'm doing and here's why. And if there's something you're seeing that is out of, I think we're all good people in general, certainly at that system level. Someone says, hey, man, you're downloading 50 copies of this file every minute. Oh, crap. Thank you. You know, I don't see why someone would block me just because, you know, I'm doing something different. But if there's an abuse, hey, it's an easy way to see that who that is and how to get in touch with me. Does that make sense?
I can see how. So I just know the way I behave with the API because like you, John, I'm fighting bot traffic on a daily basis. And what I see often is I'll see traffic that becomes abusive. Suddenly there's just some new user agent that pops up out of nowhere and just starts just hammering everything we have.
Have you seen the ones that actually apologize in the user agent? They're like, if this is causing you trouble, underscore, like, I'm sorry.
No, I have no idea.
There must be some code that does this, because I see a bunch of these every day.
And the only way I know how to handle that traffic is to rate limit it by hand, mm-hmm. and start giving them a 429, because I don't know who this thing is. It'll be some vague user agent coming from, you know, an Asian CDN. I have no idea what this is. It could be it could be just a mistake in their code, or they didn't read the terms of service, or who knows. And so all I know to do is to get their attention, I have to 429 them and get them, and that will get their attention, because suddenly their thing fails, and then and most of the time I never hear another peep from it. It just, yep. The traffic disappears.
Because they change their users.
Yeah. Well, no, but I never see the same behavior again. It just goes away. But occasionally I'll 429 somebody and I'll get an email and say, hey, I can't access the index anymore. And I will work with them and tell them what they were doing. And they're like, oh, we didn't know there was a mistake. This very thing happened with a podcast app that was backfilling transcripts. And I was like, no, you can't scrape, you know, every episode in the index. You can't scrape 150 million episodes. Just play. I will give you a better way. Let's work together, because it's going to degrade the platform for everybody else who also needs it. And so, like that, what I see with something like signing is the ability for somebody like a Buzzsprout or a Red Circle or somebody like that to identify, to go ahead and say, okay, look, this is Overcast. This is his public key. This is Podverse's public key. This is Fountain's public key. I know these guys. And if they have a spike in downloads, I can go ahead and whitelist them ahead of time so that they never get blocked. And so that if I see something that looks like a really strange change in traffic patterns, instead of blocking them, I can reach out to them,
right,
and say, hey, here's something that's going on. Just like I had to do with Fountain, and Oscar ended up identifying a problem where they were getting bot abused on their end, and that abuse was flowing through to the Podcast Index API. And Oscar was very thankful that I gave him that information so he could fix the problem on his end.
Yep, we've identified a lot of things, like in Apple Podcasts. There have been bugs in the past, and those show up like immediately in all these systems. And then, and that's why I wonder if the HLS thing is also a bug. In Overcast, they continue to have like a re-downloading bug. So you'll see a lot of the Overcast share go up. Sort of artificially in the last few months, and then people are starting to realize this. So that's a case where, like, you wouldn't want to block Overcast ever, really. But yeah, it's a good way to say, like, oh, we think it's Overcast. And whether it's signed or not, I mean, you can tell an Overcast user agent, right? And yeah, again, I don't think signing is necessarily required to do this.
Just so you know, John, my robot went to go get the Pod News Weekly Review, and as all robots do, they just decide to do it differently today. And it said, oh, I got blocked, but the Overcast user agent worked. Literally.
Exactly.
Came out of Claude code.
And I think actually James does a very good job. He's a bit grumpy on this week's episode, but he does a lot of traveling. Like, I think he does a very good job of laying out why this is important. And really, it's more about stronger client identification, right? That's really what this is. It's like, who is calling? Who's fetching the media in this case? And so that's, I think, the strongest argument. And I do agree that the semantics of whether it's using signing that looks like Mastodon or something else, and there's a lot of prior art here because websites are being sort of pulled excessively by bots. And there's a similarity there. So I don't know that a new solution is necessarily even needed here. We might just want to piggyback on one of those. Whether or not, I think it's more of a, I'm sort of not looking at it from the technical side. I'm looking at it, is this a good idea? And so everyone just needs to be, hey, is this a good idea not only for all the hosting companies, which it would be a good idea for, but also the apps and also the services that can't speak for themselves because they're not listening to the podcast.
They lose.
Yeah. Well, I know that one of a very valuable website to me that I used, it was an enthusiast website for 70s model Ford trucks. Incredible resource that had every technical diagram and detail and owner's manuals and forums and everything like that. It's basically just been completely knocked offline by AI scrapers. It finally just bit the dust this week. It's been limping along, but it just gets hammered all the time because they're getting constantly crawled and ingested, and they don't have the technical expertise to be able to deal with that. And so I know that this new era we're in because I see the same thing that Adam does. I see Claude Code when I use it. Sometimes I see it just morphing its user agent to impersonate other stuff until finally something works. And so I guess I've made the best argument I can for it. And I don't think it'll go any further than it already has. I think this is a complete wash and it's just going to die on the vine. But at least we had the discussion and, you know, we can actually make a decision. And it may become something in the future that we hold in to the side and say, at some point in the future, the ecosystem becomes so threatened by malicious traffic or impersonated traffic that we do have to blow the dust off this thing and actually do something.
And I go back to the apps. We don't often hear from the larger apps, right, that really would be impacted by this. And if you make it useful for them to do and they see the value in it, then I think that's something that we can now say, okay, both sides agree on this. This makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think you're right about that. And that's why I was very sensitive to making sure that we're actually talking about the real thing and not just talking about fears of things. Because if we're just talking about being scared about something that sounds like it might be a problem, I don't think that actually communicates the real benefit of the thing. You know, I just want everybody to actually be talking about the reality and not the fear.
I really need to stop this. Not because I
stopped. I had a rebut to that, but I'll stop.
Go. Oh, no, please rebut me.
Well, I think that's what it's about. Based on fear now, right? Like, I think we
that's
haven't
fair.
Seen a
that's
lot of
fair,
abuse
way.
Yet. And a lot of it is me as a hosting company, right? I have a model that is great, right? I have a margin that makes me a very good living and I can afford multiple people, right? And like, we've figured this formula out. I pay this much for bandwidth and I charge my customers this. Video throws a wrench into that, right? And so the question is, like, even before it happens, right? I've heard a lot, even before a lot of people had their implementations, I've heard a lot of people saying, oh, we can't, you know, it's very interesting. What will other people do? What can we afford to do? And that sort of thing. So I think a lot of, and again, there's companies that do not filter today, right? In fact, no one really does. And I just think we should be in the position of always saying, like, let's get this out there as open as possible and wait to see what happens, right? Wait to see actual abuse coming in from crawlers. I doubt there are crawlers that even parse HLS, right? There's very few. And whether they know to go to the podcast feed, go to the alternate enclosure, and then download something that would even be noticeable, right? Which, again, we're talking about the video segments. I'm not sure that that's the case, right? And I'd be willing to, let's get the data that we have out in the open and know what we're tackling instead of kind of the fear of something that, yes, videos are a lot larger, but let's take a look at what's actually happening before we start to make any decisions. And again, that goes to fear.
Yeah, I think that's very fair.
I'm afeared Dave's going to be late to his day job.
Oh, sorry, Dave.
I'm very afeared of this.
Okay, no, I think that's a good way to end it, John, and maybe the best way to move forward if the hosting companies really think this is something valuable is for them to put out some data, some numbers that detail the abuse so that we can all sort of appreciate the scale and then make appropriate decisions. Yeah, I think that's a good way to end it. Yep.
Okay. Do we have time to thank some people, Dave?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What is this? Is this a free Friday for you?
Yeah. I don't have to go back to the office.
Oh, okay. Then if I'd known that, it would let you yammer on for another 15 minutes about all this stuff.
Oh, that's good. I think everything that needed to be said was said. Do you feel that way,
John? Dave was saying, yeah, what's cool is that this is being done in the open. I would invite everyone to go to the GitHub thread.
Excuse me.
And take a look.
Chatham House rules. You can't talk about this after the podcast is over.
Well, that's the thing. Maybe I'm too cynical, but like those threads, one of the audiences, I feel like now every time I put something into the GitHub thread, the audience is like current and future clods, right? It's like, yeah. I want to make sure that like, this is on the record, right? This argument is out there, not for necessarily the people that are reading it now, but like, hey, at the time, some people were thinking about this, and then that gets ingested as part of the summary.
I can confirm the robot definitely can read GitHub and make decisions. I can confirm that because it's just updated mine. So there we go.
And if you take a look at it, the app, you'll see the feedback from the hosting side is a lot different than the feedback from the app side.
No kidding.
And that, I think that means something.
We want to thank Salty Crayon for his row of ducks, 2222. He says, howdy, Dave and Adam. I was considering stopping altogether until all the positive and optimistic tech info was brought to this meeting by Adam in regards to the index and the future of P2.0. This gave me a recharge. Thanks, Dave and Adam. Well,
you're welcome.
Happy to hear that. 1111 from Martin Lindiskog. He says, to Dave... This is coming in from true fans. I refuse to join any club that would have me as a member. Groucho Marx. Yes, indeed. 1776 from Martin Lindiskog. I'm happy to join Adam's Accord. Today I asked a guy on LinkedIn if he knew about Podcasting Initiative. What is the Podcasting Initiative? He worked for Clang AI. I will test out the transcript service for a forthcoming podcast about the Øresund region. That's the greater Copenhagen region. We will talk both in Danish and Swedish. Okay. And he sends a 1701. He's funding the show today. Testing, testing, go podcasting. Starship Boostergram of 1701. Let's see. We got 3,330 from NA Millennial from Fountain. Thank you for the podcast index API. Claude complimented its design. I'm sure it's great. # vibe coding.
No.
Mike Newman, 17,776. Boosting from the Bitcoin Valley. Stay frosty, my friends. And with that, I hit the delimiter.
I've got a boostergram that I missed from Martin Lindiskog last week.
Did I miss it too?
I think so, because he sent it to me in email. He said, Dave, yes, so this is 9252 Satoshis. He said, Dave, yes, had a ball with Mike Newman. Co-listening and chatting, maybe I should drink some moonshine or whiskey next time.
Yeah.
It turns out that a kinesiologist in Gothenburg is also a whiskey collector. Maybe I will get him starting a podcast on whiskey with a twist.
All right.
Going back to Mike, I'm happy to be on the leaderboard for the Mike Newman Show. I've listened to... he said, I've listened to the podcast for 3 hours, 37 minutes and paid 92.52 Satoshi's cheers. Okay, so I think that was... some streams. Streaming
sets
money. Yeah. Got some more. Let's see. Got some PayPals. Got Mark Van Patten.
MVP. Thank you, MVP. He's the end of show mixes for No Agenda.
He said, I listened to the Adam Accord segment with a stupid smirk on my face.
Adam
Accord. Not because it was stupid, but because you guys were just nailing it. V for V, baby.
Yeah, yay.
Let's see. We've got Cameron Rose, $25. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you, Cameron.
Ralph Estep, $50. Thank you, Ralph. Appreciate you. Martin Lindiskog, there's $1 from Martin. Brendan Mulligan at Podpage, $25.
Thank you, Brendan.
Joseph Maraca, $5. Look. It's Oscar Mary, $200.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
Thank you.
I think that's it for the PayPals. And we do have some we do have one boostergram.
One.
In addition to what you read.
Boost. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And that CSB, 25,000 sats.
Nice.
Through Fountain, he says, howdy, Dave and Adam. Today I'd like to recommend a podcast called No Agenda. where Adam Curry is chatting with half Polish, half Czech guy called Dvorak. Dvorak's mom literally had a Polish passport, so he could get a Polish passport too, if only he wanted. 25% ancestry is enough. He has 50%. Fun fact, many years ago, Dvorak gave me an interview for my now discontinued podcast, but you two are stonewalling me. Shame on you. Yo, CSB AI Arch Wizard.
Stonewalling. Yes. I got to do that. I got to do it.
I got to do it too.
I'm just trying to clear the decks. Wow. Yeah. What a board meeting. I'm wiped.
Yeah, dude, I was
wiped. Hot in here. There's no AC.
Sorry.
Do you guys do this every week? No AC? This is crazy.
You know, well, my studio is AC supplied, but quiet. The way it should be. Hey, John, thank you so much for being here today, man. We really appreciate it.
And yeah, it was fun.
Yes.
And thanks you for what you do with OP3.dev and just all the contributions. It's really appreciated. And I hope we can keep the data collective moving forward.
Yeah, I like the idea. You need a fancy marketing site where the background moves around as you move the mouse cursor around. Yeah, just
I'm not going to do any of that. No, we're not going to do any of that. We're just going to get it going one way or the other. But ultimately, these things are up to Dave. No pressure. No pressure.
I think it's a very, very interesting idea. And I think I like the idea of building it and getting it out there. And that will attract sort of like, hey, this is really interesting, and at least it's an example that other people can take a look at. So I really like the idea.
I wouldn't mind if you built it. That'd be fine. That'd be fine for me too. No, I'm serious. I mean, it doesn't have to all be Dave. I'm just saying that was just my initial thought. It's like, well, it makes sense. Here we are. As I said, it comes down to trust. A lot of these apps would fall apart if we didn't exist. So.
Yeah, let's keep thinking about it. It's a very interesting idea.
All right. Dave, my brother, thank you so much, man, as always. Good to catch up with you. Yeah, good to catch up with you.
You've had two great ideas in two weeks in a row. Like,
you know what it is? Testosterone.
High T,
everybody. Hey, Boardroom, thank you for being here. We'll be back Friday with more of your podcasting 2.0.
Podcasts are cool. You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting! We, as a collective, we have the true data, and you're full of shit.